up, Geekscape? It's welcome to a brand new Geekscape episode. I hope the microphone is working. If you guys are following the narrative from episode to episode, I am not happy with the audio on these episodes. Sound fine, and then I put them in the editing for the podcast listeners, and it sounds like I'm underwater. But if this is your first Geekscape, you don't know the difference. You're just like, hey, this guy sounds like he's a little bit underwater. Or he sounds great. Hopefully, he sounds great. Anyway, I'm Jonathan. I like to talk pop culture. I've been doing this show for 13 plus years, and that's what we talk about. But I don't like to do that by myself, which is prevalent here during the pandemic when we're quarantined. We got nobody else to talk to. So I jump on this live stream and I talk to friends as I've done throughout Geekscape, where I talk to a storyteller. Maybe they work in comics. Maybe they work in movies. Maybe they're musicians. And we just talk about telling stories. Sometimes I get actors, video game people. All that pop culture stuff is what I love. It's kind of what we're into. So that's what the show is. This week is no different. I got my good friend Natasha Halevi. I think I just totally butchered her name, but we're going to get her in here to talk about it. We met in some crazy dances. If you guys are regular geeks, you know that I'm an avid runner. And you do meet some geeks in runs. Usually they're dressed as like the Flash or, you know, there's always, I think there's always this athletic gear. Sometimes it'll be like Under Armour and they'll get like the Marvel or DC license and they'll put out like cool stretchy pants that you can run in or like Marvel themed workout gear. And so it's easy to spot the geeks in a race because we're geeks. We love to like show our fandom. And when we're running or doing any kind of event, you know, physical activity, we like to show that off there too. So it's easy to spot the geeks. My guest today, though, I ran into in a race in a pretty funny way. I did not know she was a geek. And we can talk to her about whether or not she is a geek. I think she's a geek of certain things. But since I met Natasha, she's gone on to become like a triple threat. She started like, she'd always been an actress, but then she started like writing and directing, and she put together like an all-female horror collective. They've actually been interviewed by one of our own shows on Geekscape Horror Movie Night. We've written them about them on the website, but what's crazy is this is like the first time that Tasha's been on the show, and we have a mutual friend in Lloyd Kaufman. There's a lot of like, there were a lot of like weird tangents for how, like connections for how I knew her. And then we'll tell you the story about how we actually met. It was crazy. It was a near-death experience. Thankfully, we both survived. And we'll tell you what happened. But little did we know we had so much in common. And now she's on the show. I hope you guys have been doing well during the pandemic. I'm still in the process of, like, taking everything I own and like paring it down. Here's some good news, though. It allowed me to bring a bunch of my stuff into storage. And so I took inventory of all the comic book boxes that I own. These things are full of comics. I've read every single one. And drum roll, please, I own over 70 boxes of comics. They are now currently all together in one storage unit. I do not know what I'm going to do with them, but I figure every couple of years I have to take inventory of how many comic books I've amassed over my adult life. I did not start reading again until high school. So as an adult, these are comics that I've collected. Yeah, your boy's got 70 plus boxes, chock full of comics, and no plan on what to do with them. So maybe a future episode we'll start like a, like a yard sale or something, or I'll start an auction show, an episode where I'm just like, who wants Hulk number blank, blank, blank? Going once, going twice. And we'll do one of these live streams where people are just in the comments throwing down what comic books they want as I'm showcasing them for you guys. Tons of plans. I'm just trying to be active, all right? This is a nice time to consolidate my life. I'm taking advantage of it while the world is frozen in fear. Other people, they're starting like, I don't know, the 2020 version of like Cobra. They want to be Cobra Commander. Me, I'm like, no, I just want to know how many comic books I have as I go into the rest of my adulthood because I plan on surviving this shit. All right, let's get to our guest. Tasha, come join the show. Let's introduce you. Let's see what you got. Longtime friend who long time should have been on the show before. But you know what? It took a quarantine. It took you to like, you keep going back and forth to Atlanta, and I keep being like, hey, you should be on the show. But you're like, I'm in Atlanta.
The show was in a physical location. I mean,
yeah, and now I'm like, oh, people who have been avoiding me like for a year are now like, oh, shit. I can webcam in. Yeah, I have no excuse for not being on Geekscape now. Okay.
I'm honored to be here. So thank you for actually now taking the time to bother, I guess.
Well, what's crazy is you've actually been by the Geekscape booth several times because you're usually a guest of Lloyd's at the Troma booth at Comic-Con. And they're usually the next aisle over. So I always feel like I see you during Comic-Con or Geekscape-related events because you're always coming by the booth or I'm going to visit Lloyd and you. So it always feels like you've gotten your fill of Comic-Con and Geekscape.
I've had a quite a fill of Comic-Cons and Geekscape, not just from Troma and Lloyd, but also my husband is often a guest at Comic-Cons and sometimes they tag along. So I have seen all the different kinds, all the different shapes, all the different sizes in multiple countries. So I'm like, you want to talk cons? I actually don't have that many stories.
Well, let's talk about that because I think your con experience is upgraded and I think you're amazing. But when you marry Sean Gunn, who you Geekscapists may know as the dude who is in Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. He mocaps Rocket and does a lot of that acting. He just, the only thing he doesn't do is the voice. That's it. Sean is Rocket. To me, Sean is Rocket. And you were telling me earlier, your first Comic-Con experience. You were broke as a joke.
Yeah. My first Comic-Con was San Diego Comic-Con. It was 2016. If it weren't for my parents, I wouldn't have been there because they hooked Kansas and I up with a hotel room. Otherwise, Kansas Voling, who directed a trauma film that I was in called BC Butcher, Lloyd Kaufman invited both of us down to join the Troma booth, aka help Hawk.
I love how that works. Yeah. Come on down. We'll promote you. Can you sell some DVDs?
Yeah. And how scantily clad can you do it?
Right.
If anybody's ever seen anything remotely closely related to Troma, you understand all of that.
If you're a Geekscapist, you know what's up.
Great. Perfect. Yeah. So we went down, we drove down, we went to our hotel room and immediately showed up to San Diego Comic-Con, first con ever, first was that. And it's
the Super Bowl of Comic-Cons, yeah.
It's the Super Bowl's a big deal, but I'm pretty sure San Diego Comic-Con's a bigger deal. Like, the entire city is taken over. I'm sure many people here have been, but the entire city is taken over. It's not like you're like, oh, I'm going to a building where Comic-Con is happening. It is like you are going to a town that has been taken completely over by everything sci-fi. Restaurants are taken over by the sci-fi channel and the whoever and the whatever, and everybody's got a spot and people build roller coasters and
you gotta go on a zombie run through the baseball stadium. And what you said is very true, that the whole city gets taken over during Comic-Con and restaurants become themed by sponsors and things like that. But for somebody who's broke, and I've spent many Comic-Cons without any money on my pocket, and the tough thing about that is with those sponsorships and with that captive audience that Comic-Con brings every year, the prices on food and hotels and everything goes way up. We were looking at hotel prices today. We were talking about hotel prices in San Diego. Now that San Diego Comic-Con's been canceled, there's been talk of maybe we should just go down to San Diego and reminisce as small groups and just kind of hang out. With masks on and social distancing. But we looked our friend Chris Gore, who's a previous guest of Geekscape from Film Threat, he said that the price of the Marriott's $200 when it's usually $350 a night or $300.
So, great.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see how June goes.
Bring San Diego Comic-Con back to what it once was.
Yeah, a bunch of lock boxes in a basement. We could do that. So there is talk of just going down to San Diego and hanging out, but that first Comic Con, like, how did you, like, what were some of the things that you learned where you're like, okay, where's the free food? How do I survive this?
I learned where none of the free food was. I didn't learn how to survive it. It was, I think, here's how you can attend Comic Con. Like, as somebody who understands and knows what to expect and has friends who can, like, hook you up with, like, all the details on, like, how to get into the parties and what lines to stand in overnight and what lines not to stand in overnight. And then you can come as a guest. And when you come with trauma, you come right in between those two things. So you have no information from friends on how to get into the cool parties. You have no hookups from the con on how to get into cool parties. And you have nobody escorting you anywhere. And you are wandering around, like, trying to find the room that you're supposed to be at the trauma panel for at, like, 11 p.m. at night, because that's when the panel happens. And it's like, it's the most hilarious way, I think, to experience a Comic-Con is by going as a guest of Troma, because first of all, you're welcome and loved by so many people. Troma fans are the best. Lloyd Kaufman is just incredibly funny and humorous and loving and knows everyone and loves everyone and means it genuinely from his heart and is very generous with what he can offer. So there's that aspect that's really, 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 really wonderful. But then there is definitely the aspect of, like, well, there's no golf cart picking me up and taking me, like, backstage to get to a cool panel.
Yeah, the panels are always late. And I always feel like Matt Kelly, from who he hosts Horror Movie Night for us. Like, I feel like he's always like the only one at that panel, because it's 11 o'clock at night. And this past year, I wasn't at the hotel room. I used that night, and that was, like, my socializing night. Mm-hmm. And he was done with that panel. He was done with that panel, and he's like, "I want to go to bed." And he did, and I had the hotel key, so he, like, had to carry all the free shit they give out at that panel. And he, like, had to hunt for me from hotel to hotel looking for the key. But that being said, I love Lloyd, and I really love Megan and Marcus, who run the Troma booth. I look forward to seeing them every summer. And I'm going to miss them this year. And next year, I'll see how much their baby has grown, because, like, they're like family to me. Yeah. And it's not because Megan has a crush on my brother, Paul. But she's like, "Hey, is your brother Paul coming this summer?" Because my brother, former WWE wrestler Paul London, he came and signed once at our booth one summer. And every summer since, Megan has been like, "Is your brother coming this summer?"
Maybe you can.
I don't know who has a bigger crush, she or Marcus, like, when it comes down to it. He's a big wrestling fan. So now you are married to Sean Gunn.
Yeah. So
how did that change?
The con experience changed. Well, one, I don't have to do anything. I just get free food. I just get rides places. And I just get to sit in cool spots and watch cool things while Sean does all the work. So that's fun. But as it turns out, when you're there representing a Marvel character and his work in Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and the Avengers movies, people are a little more excited to host you and escort you and bring you gifts and flowers and roses all day long. And I just kind of, like, hang back and get to, like, I'm like, you just got, I'll eat some of that. Like, that's delicious. So
I could have used it back in 2016, but I guess I'll take it now.
I don't know why they treat Marvel representatives so much better than Troma representatives. I feel like it's unfair. And in fact, as far as I'm concerned, Sean is a Troma representative because he was in a Troma film 20 years before I was in a Troma film called Tromeo and Juliet. So, I feel like we're the same type of royalty.
If you want to drop that, you can probably drop that a few places and it might be, like, get you into, like, a Guar concert, but I don't know what the currency would be, like, at Comic-Con. Marvel does bring in a lot of their business. I can understand, but I think there's a Ben Folds song that, like, he's like, "Hey, now that I'm famous, I don't need any of this shit for free. I needed it when I was, like, playing in piano bars, like, nobody knew who I was." And I think, I don't know the name of the song, but there's definitely a Ben Folds song. And I'm sure many successful artists have made art about getting free shit now that they don't need the free shit. But I will tell you, Tasha, get all that free shit. And Sean, if Sean, I think you're listening. I would say when the tables turn and she's getting all the free shit and you're right in it's her golf cart you're riding in, then you'll be happy and you'll be like, hey, payback. Now I get to ride for free a little bit.
We're going to get in the biggest fight tonight now.
No, don't be like that.
I'm kidding. That's not true.
You guys are recently married. You can't be fighting over things like that. You got to keep the support structure a little bit longer. And let's talk about that, because one of the things that I think is awesome and why I was like, here's what's been going on with Geekscape is I end up with like a ton of male guests, and I love the male guests. I love the dudes, but I'm like, come on, we got to be showcasing some female creators. And I looked up on your Instagram, and it just seemed like, hey, dummy, Tasha has been making stuff for the last few years. She put together an all-female horror collective called you want to pronounce it?
Collective. Yep. We're a group of six female horror directors. I should say creators. Five directors, myself, Megan Rosati, Lola Blanc, Danin Jacque, Francesca Maldonado. And then as a creator and an animator, Linda Chen also is a part of that group. And we all sort of came together and said, hey, we see that there's a lack of female representation in genre and horror specifically. And we care about this genre. We enjoy watching it. We enjoy creating around it. How can we help each other do this? So we formed a collective, which was us sitting down, you know, the first time at somebody's kitchen table and saying, what do? We want to create, we want to make things. How can we help each other? And it took us really not that long to figure out the way we were going to help each other was to actually physically help each other and actually physically help create together. So we created as much sort of proof of concept as we possibly could. And with very, very, very little money, pooled our resources, got some great donations. Panavision gave us a really generous donation for a 3-day period of equipment, which made a huge difference for us. And we worked on six projects, really five projects, because one was animated, five projects over a 3-day period. And everybody rallied. I mean, we all were there for each other to work on our projects that we were directing. But, you know, for example, like on my project, on the day I shot along with another director, Francesca Maldonado. And my DP was Sarah Garth, who was incredible and amazing to work with. And she had Mike D, who shot Brightburn, working with her as her second, and then they switched places for the second half of the day. So they both got to do their art with a different director and still contribute to sort of the cause of working through this like really gnarly day. And we all did the same. We AD'd each other's projects, or we did runs to get food. We were in, thinking of pandemic times, we were in like the most crowded little places with all kinds of people because we were just in each other's apartments shooting. And we just rallied, really is what it is we kind of pulled the resources. We tried to convince a lot of people we could do it, and we did it.
Yeah. And how much of that to me, you know, and when you think about these, Heidi's kind of starting to get the directing bug. And we finished our short right in time for festivals to be shut down by a pandemic. But she kind of has this, she has an idea for a short she wants to do. I'm showing her like some older films that are kind of in that other school. This would be like the Corman school that, cool. You know, so I just showed her like five easy pieces, and I've got like some other like late 60s, early 70s stuff I want to show her. But I would say that, talk about that Corman school, the school that you and Sean came out of and James Gunn came out of is the same kind of school, and that's Lloyd's school.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, any way you got to get this done, let's get it done. And so hearing that you guys, Ben and the Fatale Collective, we got together and like powered each other through one crazy weekend of making proof of concepts, the trauma way, Like, that's your film school. And I think that that is as valuable as the one I paid for. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's so much value in just doing the work and moving forward. I think, you know, you just mentioned coming from like that kind of same like Corman school, Kaufman school, you know, James, Sean's brother, James Gunn has said many, many, many times, and Sean repeats this and I repeat this when we're getting stuck on something, you just have to finish what you start. It's so simple and it's true for anything in life. So there's no reason it shouldn't also apply to filmmaking. But for some reason, the concept of filmmaking is very overwhelming, probably because what we see when we see films is so huge and spectacle and overwhelming and beautiful and perfect and well-written. You know, the things that we actually, that ever really make it to market aren't everybody's the first work that everybody did. Sometimes some people are just genius. But it does take, you know, it takes a lot to get to that place. But when we see that, it's overwhelming. And you say, oh, I can't do that. I can't make it look like that. I don't know what that special effect is. I have no idea how to write like that, you know, and maybe that's true. Maybe you don't know how to write like that. So maybe you find someone to collaborate. Maybe you don't know how to shoot like that. You find a DP with a huge amount of experience or a small amount of experience, but a great deal of spirit. You know, you work with people who believe in you and will encourage you. Fatal Collective definitely was that, you know, we all knew exactly where we were and what our level of experience was and still said, you can do it and you can do it at this level. Mm-hmm. And trusted each other and having, you know, you've got to build the right teams and build the right trust and finish it. I think I just said like 10 different things at
once. No, it was great. And I think that everything was consistent in and of itself. I don't know why you're hiding the seventh member that you guys kicked out, but whatever. whose body you buried out in the desert? I'm kidding. I'm making up shit. I'm making up rumors.
Yeah. Rumors are great. So.
But I think that's important. I think that what you just said, the word is like a community. You have to create some kind of support structure or nobody gives a shit about your movie. Like, I mean, I'm not saying yours specifically. I'm saying
no one cares about my movie.
Like this is what I tell people. The industry has lasted for over 100 years without you. It's going to do just fine without you. Nobody cares. You have to find a way to make it without anybody's help. And then slowly but surely, you're going to start picking up the people who are willing to carry stuff for you or help out or stay late or work for free or just sweat. And eventually those are going to be the people that you then hire. And then you have access to their community or their skills. And yeah, anybody who says, oh, I don't know how to write like that, or I don't know how to shoot like that, or I don't know how to write something that's feature length. I'm like, yet. The word you haven't said is in the parentheses and it's yet. Yeah. You just haven't done it yet.
You know, you said something really important, which was you have to do it yourself, you know, for people to get on board, basically. I didn't phrase that exactly the same way you did, but something to that effect. And I think that that's very true. There's another horror film that I shot called Beauty Juice. I was really lucky to have a great DP with a great deal of experience. His name is Charles Papert.
I think he's awesome. I've seen Beauty Juice.
He's awesome.
Because Kate did the poster, remember? Yeah,
that's absolutely true. Yeah. And it's an awesome poster. But if that's a great example of, you know, I edited that film myself and colored it myself and learned DaVinci Resolve and I'd never used it. And I think I did an okay job of it. However, once I had done that work, somebody else saw it in before I had released it and said, hey, good job coloring. Do you have any interest in maybe having somebody who really has a more experience coloring it? And I was like, yeah, but like, I mean, I actually have no budget. So I have no idea how much that costs or what that means. And he was like, just calm down. Let me connect you with this woman named Monica Escalante. She's a young colorist who at that time was working at eFilm. She's now working at Marvel. And said, like, she's taking on small projects on weekends. Let me just see if she'd be interested. And she took a look at it and she loved it and she was interested. And Charles Papert came to eFilm and as did I, and we spent the day there. And I had the opportunity to color right next door to It, who was coming out that week.
Oh, right. The Warner. Yeah.
you know, and I, it was like, oh, this is what it looks like to color. This is what it looks like to see this film in this size. This is what it looks like to work with somebody who can take the words that I'm saying that aren't necessarily technical, but are about the look and feel, and interpret it and bring the technical interpretation to it to make it have those feelings. So it was a, it was the most clear example of you have to do it first. I mean, I opened Resolve and I was like, like, I had no idea what I was doing. And the fact that I tried made somebody else say, oh, you're trying. Let me give it to you now. And I think it's really true. You have to do it and learn it and do it, learn it bad. Maybe you're not going to be as good of a colorist as somebody who's a professional colorist. You're not gonna be as good of an animator as somebody who's a professional animator. I just opened After Effects for the first time on Sunday to make a film for a film competition. And I opened After Effects and I was like, I had this idea that I wanted to make. I had made like the first version of this thing called Jane in Space. Jane obviously playing homage to Barbarella and Jane Fonda. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna do the Jane in Space 2 and I'll make her in space. And so in order to make her in space, you know, these are quarantine films. This is another really important message, actually. Like, sometimes you have to really have your community and your support and people who understand all of the pieces. And sometimes if you have an idea, make it on your own. Maybe it's going to come out bad and you toss it. Maybe it's going to come out great. So this was an example of I shot it the first night and I looked at the footage and it was terrible. And I've shot it again and opened up After Effects and put it into After Effects. And I was just like, what have I done? I don't know how to put my face into space now.
Because you had to put your face on a spacesuit. And then there's a lot going on in your short, because then you had to add like the reflection of the stars and everything to it. There's a lot of compositing going on. Not exactly something to bite off for a first time like effects person, but fuck it.
But hey. I had an idea. I wanted to try it. And somebody who does that professionally could have done a really rad job of it. But I feel really psyched about what I did. And it was enough. I felt happy about it enough to then submit it to the competition because I was like, this is cool. I like it. That's great. Maybe somebody will see it and be like, ah, she likes working with visual effects. I know someone who does visual effects that would like working with her. I don't think I will ever be the one to take on the job of visual effects. I probably maxed out my visual effects capability yesterday or Sunday.
But you don't know that unless you throw, like, you don't know if you can swim unless you throw yourself into the deep end. Yeah. Like, you just don't know. And maybe you can't swim.
And maybe you drown and die.
But you won't drown and die. It's fucking filmmaking. Unless you're working for that asshole who beat people on the train tracks in Georgia, you're not going to fucking die.
Okay. Like,
okay, unless
somebody will throw in a life preserver and you'll get out and it's going to be fine.
But, you know, and what we were saying earlier was that, yes, filmmaking is nerve-wracking, and it has caused me in the past to be like, I want to take a right where I should probably be taking a left. And there have been times where you will shy away from the challenge. But ultimately, shying away is a mistake. And the more you do it, the more you realize how completely not fatal it is. And beyond that, how most people just don't give a damn. And like a safety net or not a safety net, if you make a total, like if you make a flop, nobody cares. And if you make a hit, everybody cares. There are very few flops that people have cared about.
Yeah.
And it's mainly like the Super Mario Brothers movie and like everything else. It's like, there's not a lot of flops. And again, going back to Lloyd and the Trauma School, those are movies that were made to get made and sold in foreign markets and on the boom of the VHS era. Like they weren't made to win Oscars. They were made to like shit product and have a cool poster, hoping that somebody in France would buy it or that it would end up in a mom-and-pop VHS store. And that's how it worked. Or even before that, when he had to four-wall his own movies and take them theater to theater, he knew that like putting Toxic Avenger or something outrageous on a marquee or in a poster was gonna get people into a midnight screening in Detroit. He didn't have to worry about any of this stuff. He just needed to get the thing done, or no money was gonna come in.
Yeah, and you know, since you're using that as an example, he still does that.
He sent me a contract that looked the size of the fucking Bible for my first short film, and I was like, I ain't signing this. Lloyd, I know you know all the tricks. And his wife is as lovely as Lloyd is. She's equally as lovely. And she tried to get me to come. She kept telling me when I was trying to make my short into a feature called Gay. It was a short called Gay by Dawn. It's a horror movie for homophobes. It's an anti-homophobic movie.
Sounds like an important movie to be made.
I would love to make a feature film version of Gay by Dawn. And we tried, and she kept being like, come to upstate New York, because she was the film commissioner for the state of New York. And she kept saying, come to upstate New York, we got Woods, you can come do it. And I kept being like, hey, maybe that's it. The script just and the script for Gay by Dawn does not have to be great.
Right.
It still wasn't good. We gave it a couple tries.
If Lloyd sees this, he'll probably call you immediately and be like, so, about that script.
Lloyd, we can do it. I want to get Fred Ward in it. And then is Sean there? Can we get Sean in? Yeah. He can play one of the Y'all-Kada dudes with the raffles. He can be like,
Sounds like casting.
You got to be in it. You got to be in this.
Sean requests trauma wages if you got to be
in trauma. Sean, can you peek your eyes into this frame right now?
I'm checking to see if Fred Ward was still alive.
I figure, Sean, here's the dream cast. We get Fred Ward, right? We got to have Rima Williams in it.
Right.
John Hawks for a little bit of cachet.
Right. I know John.
John Hawks. A little bit of cachet. But then we kind of start making Expendables of Horror. We got to call Robert Englund.
First of all, I have to jump in and say, are you suggesting that I do not bring cachet on my own?
You do. But John Hawks is Oscar nominated John Hawks. You get what I'm saying on that one, right? People be like, oh, I want to go see this movie. It might be really good. Yeah. And then about 15 minutes in, they're like, what the fuck is happening? This movie's terrible. But we already had their money, honey. You hear this? You see the strategy?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Fred Ward.
I've heard this strategy.
I love Fred Ward. I think Right Stuff is one of my five favorite movies of all time.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And
we're not making that.
And I think if you can call it
maybe you don't know.
If you can call it a B movie, Miami Blues is damn near the best B movie ever made.
I've not seen it. Oh, but Miami Blues, that thing just got a big resurgence. Everybody started talking about it again.
Did they?
I had never heard of this movie, and then suddenly I'm starting to see clips from it getting shared on Twitter, and I'm like, "What is this? I must find it."
It's awesome. Okay.
Well, we're gonna. You know what we're gonna do?
More Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Mm-hmm. I just got. We're gonna put we'll put it out. We're working on some other movies
right now. This is actually a Zoom meeting about a movie that we're making that everybody happens to be able to watch.
we'll get it going. When are you guys going back to work? I had a movie I was casting when this thing hit, and now everybody's just working on cartoons. Suddenly, we're all making cartoons.
Man.
I was supposed to start a movie in August that is now tentatively pushed to January. So I can't imagine that I'll be doing anything before then, probably. I don't know. I mean, I canceled all my conventions for the rest of the year, obviously. Can't imagine there will be any conventions for the rest of the year,
except for,
I have a
small San Diego Comic-Con that was
just guys, let's find the weekend of Comic-Con. Let's go down there and let's just sit on the pier. And eat a sandwich and be like, guys, remember Comic-Con? They're not even running the carousel.
It's gonna be a while.
That'd be like the Geekscape themed Comic-Con where it's like, oh, there's some nerds over there. We can get golf carts if we want, but we have to steal them.
The only thing I want is a golf cart ride wherever I'm going. Why is that so much to ask for?
I don't know when we're gonna go back to work, but we have to. But that's why I watched your short, the Jane in Space 2, and you guys both worked on it, which is what we're talking about, like support structure.
I did very little, but
Those composites.
I did the camera and which I ended up kind of doing poorly, believe it or not, because my pacing was a little off. But
he does everything great.
And I helped great. I helped color some of the images that she used, but that's it.
But here's the thing, I think. Let me just tell you what I think is the thing, because Heidi and I made a short together, and I'm always joking, I don't know if we're going to make another short together. I think I'm going to be the cupcake guy. If you want to go make a short, I'll be the cupcake guy. And if I go and make something, you can be the cupcake person. Like, having someone in your, like, I think in relationships, there's a level of equality. I think in storytelling, I think there's a level of just you have to have some kind of singular voice that has to win those conversations. Does that make sense? Here's my significant other. Heidi just jumped in here for her piece.
There's both of those elements, right? I think you have to know, you know, Sean's working on another project that like I chime in on once in a while right now. And I have some other projects that I ask for Sean's opinion on. And I think always when we have a conversation about it, the work up levels, you know, and it becomes better. But when it comes to like the day of shooting, you know, there is a hierarchy for a reason when you're shooting. And it's because it's necessary to keep things moving in the right direction. And it is important to have, you know, when you get too much collaboration, things get watered down. You have to say like, okay, at a certain point, we trust this artistic view and we're going to say like, run with that viewpoint. Maybe I don't understand it completely, but you do. And you have a purpose and you have a reason and I don't totally understand it. And in the edit, I really hope to understand it. Mm-hmm. And so while there is like a time and a place for the collaboration, there is also a time and a place to like kind of abide by the rules that were set down for a reason, which is like, you're in charge, then you're in charge, then you're in charge and you're getting cupcakes.
That's why I'm hosting the show and she's in the other room doing the laundry. That's what I'm saying. I've been quarantining at her place. So I have to mention that. Here's our production company
broadcasting
from her studios. Because
and just for the record, I think sometimes Jonathan and I have I feel like sometimes we're having like banter and a discussion, and he thinks we're like arguing. So, and I think
don't hit me.
I think that's what happens sometimes during production. It's the first thing we've ever made together, though. I feel like it could happen.
Maybe the next thing we collaborate on has legs.
Also, there's like some level of like.
Does that mean it's going to be a child?
Yeah.
Human?
What are you?
Human child? No. I'll say it here. I got her a Mogwai.
Oh,
it's gonna be great. It's gonna be awesome until it starts sweating, and then we're all fucked.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the rules are. I don't know what time zone it's calibrated for.
Can I ask a quick Mogwai question?
Yeah,
of course.
You're not supposed to feed it after midnight, right? Till when? Everything's after midnight.
Everything's after midnight.
Till sunrise?
If anybody gives me a Mogwai, I'm wrapping it in a fucking bag and I am suffocating it.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm doing it very quickly so that it doesn't sweat and get wet.
That took a real dark turn.
I know. But come on. You might as well be giving somebody a grenade without a pin on it. Like, sooner or later, that thing's going to go off. Like, you can't be giving people Mogwais. It's irresponsible. And I think Billy's got a lot of fucked up shit to talk about.
If you knew you were going to get the gremlin, the one from Gremlins 2 that is, like, very erudite and wearing glasses and, like, a smoking jacket and stuff, then I would rather have that gremlin than a Mogwai even.
Right. But, Sean, remember, that gremlin only came about because it drank all that formula. like that was not the natural
gremlin. Yeah, that's like, right.
Memory.
Those gremlins were augmented by their environment. I think that maybe there might be some people who are like, you know what? If I could probably raise that gremlin right, because I'll provide an environment for it where that gremlin will turn out to be okay and not eat everybody. That's a big mistake. Okay, like that is a big mistake, but we're seeing the pandemic. There are definitely there are definitely people who are like, I ain't gonna trust science on this Mogwai thing.
Right.
Gremlins 2 is a great movie, and it was my brother recently made a list of movies where the sequel is better than the original, and he put it on Twitter just, you know, for his own vanity, I suppose. But
to share an idea.
Right, share ideas. Give people ideas for movies. So but Gremlins 2 was the first movie I looked for. I'm like, Gremlins 2 better be on this list. And it was. He had it on his list. So
what else would be on there besides Jane in Space 2? Which you guys keep? And real quick, Geekscape, because we are going to talk about what sequels are better than the originals. If you guys want to vote right now, what's going on till Monday is Jane in Space 2. Bye, cutie. Jane in Space 2 is up for voting, and it needs your votes. What I want you guys to do is I'm throwing up on the live stream Natasha's Instagram handle. I want you guys to go and find it. And then
I also want that.
When you guys find the Instagram handle, it's Tasha Litas. Go to the link in her bio. There's a link. It'll take you to her short. Vote for the short. You got to register for oddpop.com. But it's a really cool website, especially for you filmmakers, because they have contests like this coming up all the time where you have to be creative in quarantine or with your limited resources or with Sean doing your Photoshop. Like, and you got to figure out how to make your short and then have your friends vote for it. And I want you guys to vote for Jane in Space too, because I watched it. I was like, let's see how it is. I was totally impressed by your first like time doing compositing. It was awesome. And beyond that,
opened it Sunday morning.
Beyond that, Tasha, what I think makes the short really work is, and why I wanted Heidi to watch it, because I think both of you are really great dialogue writers and really great character writers, because it very easily could have felt like a long 2 minutes. You've seen those shorts that feel like a long two. It's not a long 2 minutes. It's fun and it's poppy. And I just want you Geekscapists to watch the short, vote for it, but really like think about all the filmmaking that's been successful in limitations. And like there's no reason why we can't be doing that right now. Limitations, if anything, like help your filmmaking. They help channel it. I just brought The Bicycle Thieves, my favorite movie, over for Heidi to watch because, hey, those guys weren't going to wait for the end of World War fucking II to make their movies. Yeah, Rome was in rubble. We're going to make our damn movie about a guy who stole his bicycle. Like, why not? Yeah. I think it makes some really good filmmaking.
I mean, also, now is a great time. If you have an idea of something to make that you can make with whoever's in your house, even if it's just you, the two that I made, the first one that I made, the rules were nobody else could help you. So mm-hmm. I legitimately made it by myself. But like, bye.
I'm trying to get some more light on.
He's going to get
on us. Yeah, we're starting to get comments.
Our window is like in the sun and I'm like.
I saw it. We're starting to get comments from people who are throwing out their favorite sequels. So, Sean, you might have to come back for that one.
Get that list. I do just want to say, though, that it is like, you know, when you are in a time, I'm going to move into the shade a little bit, at least, where you are confined and you have the rules, you kind of have like permission, a little bit of better permission to try it, because mm-hmm. everyone gets it. If it's not, you know, if you didn't make like Avengers 4, you know, they're going to understand.
Is there news on that, Sean? No, I'm kidding.
You know, I
just want Stiltman news. That's all I want.
You know, do it now. You can use your iPhone. Nobody's going to be like, oh my gosh, how lame, you used your iPhone to make a film. People are going to be like, cool, you put your idea out there in a way that you could during these circumstances. So use the rules and use the ups and the downs, the roller coasters, the highs and the lows. There are so many emotions. A lot of the film contests that are out that you guys should totally look for if you're interested are like, you know, they're themed around what we're experiencing right now and the emotions that we're going through and the toilet paper that we don't have access to, whatever it is, like it's all kind of embedded in these projects.
If anything, the gleam gets stripped away and you're just left with whether or not you can tell a sincere story. And ultimately, it's not about that technology, because John Cassavetes would have killed for this camera that we've had on our phone. Like, he had to tape together a fucking Bolex camera and, like, shoot.
I wouldn't give to shoot with a Bolex camera.
We shot Gay by Dawn with a Bolex camera.
So cool.
So sequels.
Here we go. The list is up.
Okay, let me go through my brother's list really quickly.
This is whose list?
And I'm going to tell. This is my brother James Gunn's list of sequels that are better than the originals. And then I'm going to say very briefly whether he's correct or not. Okay. So Toy Story 2, that's correct. Godfather 2, that's correct. Superman 2, I don't really remember. Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. My brother loves that movie. I've never seen it. Evil Dead 2, that's correct. Shrek 2, I've never seen. Dark Knight, that's correct. Bride of Frankenstein, definitely correct. Hellboy 2, I've never seen either one of them. Road Warrior, that's correct. For a few dollars more, God, it's been a long time. I don't remember. Paddington 2, I hear that movie's great. Never seen it. X2, I don't even know what that is.
It's X-Men 2. It's the one where, like, it was the second X-Men movie that Brian Singer.
Oh, yeah.
That was better. Because Nightcrawler, yeah.
Empire Strikes Back, that's correct.
That's easy. That's an easy one.
Wrath of Khan, I don't remember that one that well.
Oh, dude, he fucking starts by putting a worm in the dude's ear. Like, Wrath of Khan is definitely better than the motion picture.
Yes, Wrath of Khan.
Superman 2, that's emphatically correct. That's correct.
Superman 2.
Gremlins 2, of course, I just said that's correct. Blade 2, I don't think I've ever seen.
That was the Guillermo del Toro one. That is a better one.
Legend of the Drunken Master. I've never seen that.
The best part of Legend of the Drunken Master is when the old dude flips back onto a table and you know that they just reversed the film. That shit is tight.
Desperado, I recall that being correct. Here's one people might have beef with, but I agree with them. Blade Runner 2049.
What?
I'm in agreement with my brother on that one. I think the first one's kind of boring.
Yes, I agree, but sadly, I think the sequel's boring. It's just more boring. I'm like, it's
amazing, but the movie's a little.
They're slow.
It's been a long time.
Sean, real quick, we talked about it on the show a few episodes ago, but Blade Runner actually got an unofficial sequel. The movie Soldier with Kurt Russell was written as a Blade Runner fucking sequel. Same screenwriter. And when you hear the timelines described in Soldier, where Kurt Russell's like robotic whatever characters had to fight in the different wars, they're the same wars that the replicants fought in Blade Runner. So
wow,
Soldier, Kurt Russell's basically playing a replicant. It's
very interesting.
Very interesting.
I've never seen Soldier.
No, not a lot of people did.
There's only a few more on this list. Final Destination 2. I don't know.
I liked Final Destination 1.
Captain America, Winter Soldier, that's definitely better.
Definitely better.
Also, the martial arts in Captain America, Winter Soldier are, like, mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
Not just mm-hmm.
Swordsman 2. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the two final ones, he says, P.S., it's an unarguable fact. Alien and Aliens are equal. I disagree. I think Alien is better.
You think the Ridley Scott one
would be superior, in my opinion?
I feel like they're different genres. Like
Terminator 2 on the list, and it belongs. And I disagree. I don't think Terminator 2 does belong on the list, but there you go.
You don't think Terminator 2 is better than Terminator 1?
I do not.
Por qué? Why is that?
I don't know. What do you mean? I don't know. First one's better.
This is pretty damn good.
Probably going to watch both of these tonight.
Von Bolden says Scream 2, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2, for sure. Revenge of the Sith. Well, we're not going to get into the prequels, please, sir. Rush Hour 2. How are those? Those are the same movie. Incredibles 2. No, first Incredibles is awesome. And you know what? You said Halloween 2018.
Go back to the drawing board this morning.
No, I don't like that one. I definitely think that Sam Raimi's second Spider-Man movie is fucking awesome.
I like that Terminator's kind of gritty, and I like that Terminator feels like an indie movie.
Mm-hmm.
And Terminator 2 is just so, like, the special effects are amazing. But it just feels so Hollywood. It gets a little schmaltzy.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. I think the first Terminator. But it's been a long time. It's been a long time since I've seen either one of them, to be honest.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
That's really up for debate. There are people who argue one way or the other.
What do you argue?
I'm so close to them. It's so hard to me. You know, I have a much bigger role in Guardians 2, so for me as an on-screen presence, it's kind of better to say Guardians 2. But there was something so special and unique about the experience of making the first Guardians that I can't like judge it in a vacuum. It was such a different thing for me and for my career, and to be a part of this, of something so huge, that it'll always probably feel a little more special in
but
a way.
Also, the same point for audiences, seeing Guardians 1 for the first time was such a different movie going experience than any other Marvel film had been, for sure. Any other superhero film had been, for sure. Whereas going into Guardians 2, audiences, you know, had a different expectation for what those films were, especially by then, like the Thor Ragnarok had come out. Is that true? Is that true? Am I right?
I think Thor Ragnarok was after.
But like, you know, there was already like the pacing and the liveliness and the joy and the music and the experience in a different way, and the grittiness that wasn't about like a superhero, but like,
I think what you mean is maybe the weird.
Well, yeah, the where you'd come from if you hung out at Troma.
We were very familiar with James's work. I worked with Peter Alton on a series for Fox. Like, I met James a few times, and for sure, like, we pushed pretty hard here on Geekscape when Super came out. We loved it, and cool. I remember at WonderCon we had both Rayan and James on the show talking about it. So, like, when he got the gig for Guardians, the first thing was like, oh shit, they're making a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Anybody who kind of had their ear to the ground kind of knew Marvel was trying to stretch beyond the superhero movies, and they needed it, because my argument is that up to that point, everything felt in that same tone, and they had like their different tones here and there with some fantasy, with some World War II stuff, but really they needed some really weird shit. And that first Guardians, I remember I went to the premiere, and it was exactly what it needed to be, and it blew. I would argue that thing turned the universe, as importantly as the first Iron Man did, in saying, hey, this is what we could do, and it just expanded everything. I love that first Guardians movie so much.
Yeah, it was such a weird thing. It was such a cool thing making it, too, that like when we first started, we had no idea, and it seemed that there were so many ways that it could be a spectacular failure, you know. My brother said many times he was worried that he was making Pluto Nash when he started, and it was right around, we had been filming for just a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks or something, and they took like a very rough sizzle reel to Comic-Con in San Diego, and I wasn't there for that, but the principal cast members, my brother, were there, and the audience went nuts, and they could just tell, you know, the cast then sort of understood what the tone of the movie was. They got it. Everybody got it, and then it was like the plane took off on the runway, and from then on out, I think we all felt very, very confident that we were making something really unique and special, you know, to use an overused word, it felt special.
Well, I think that and I think the one that Taika did, the Thor Ragnarok, those are, and like Ant-Man, I've always wanted to see, I always wanted to see Peyton Reed's Fantastic Four back when he was at Fox. Like, I like the comics that are like unabashedly pop, and I like that weird stuff is awesome.
Yeah.
You don't have to answer this one, but while we're talking about sequels that are better than the original, Suicide Squad 2, I know you're biased. What's up?
So biased.
Will it be better than the first one? No offense to the first one.
I've never seen the first one.
It's awesome.
I have seen the first one.
I have it on good authority that the second one is freaking awesome.
Okay. You know, I mean, because that first one, it was tight. You know, it was a movie.
Hey, I don't, you know, one way to...
You know,
one way to avoid the question...
There's some really cool stuff in that movie, actually. I think there's some good stuff in that movie.
Something I've learned...
There's a lot of cool trailers.
Something I've learned in my career is that if there's ever a movie where you don't want to answer the question, what did you think of it? Just don't watch it.
Yeah.
And you can always say, I haven't seen it.
It gave us an awesome Margot Robbie Harley Quinn. And yeah. that was
Oh, she's fantastic.
Worth its weight in gold.
Give us that iconic Harlequin.
All right, so Tasha, this is what I want the Geekscapists to do. I'm going to throw your name back up here. You guys are going to go to Instagram. You guys are going to find the link in Tasha's bio. It's Tasha Litas on Instagram. I just threw it up on the screen. You Geekscapists are listening on the podcast. This contest is only going to run through Monday, and I really need you guys to go and over to OddPop. That's AUDPOP. But the best way to get to the link is to go through the Instagram link that Tasha has up on her profile. That's Tasha Litas on Instagram. Click on that link. Watch the short. If you guys are independent filmmakers, if you guys are maybe like you got tons of experience, but you're trying to figure out how to make movies during the pandemic, watch this thing. It'll inspire you. If you guys are just getting into filmmaking, watch it. It'll inspire you. The things to look for. Guys, it's like minimal characters, minimal location, minimal shots, but the writing is really good, and that is what a movie needs. Like, that's your in. If you don't have that character, you don't have a freaking story. Doesn't matter where they go. They can go to Mordor and chuck the freaking ring into the magma. You're not going to care if you don't like the character and don't relate to them. Watch the short. I was like, shit, what can I shoot?
You can shoot a lot.
It's awesome. It was pretty great.
Anything.
Yeah. I definitely texted it to Heidi and was like, hey, Heidi, watch this short. I think I can get fired up by it. So, but Geekscapists, what I want you to do is go check out that link and vote for it, because I think there's rounds to this. And if you guys are filmmakers, join the OddPop community anyway. There's always more opportunities like this to make something creative.
Yeah. When you sign up with it, you can sign up as a filmmaker and then you have access to all of their filmmaking, tools and contests and everything. So just, try it out.
We'll do it. Von Bolden says, I will check it out. Von, you're one of my former film students for sure. Now, Tasha, we got to talk about how we met, because we've actually gone without talking about it. I think Sean,
you guys did. Okay.
Thanks, brother. Okay, so listen.
He's tired of hearing the story of how we met when we saved each other.
Now, listen, the story goes a couple different ways. This is how I remember it. We were in a Ragnar race on the last relay. We actually had the, 35th leg.
It wasn't the last.
Okay? It's a relay race. But you and I, this is the last of us. We just had to run 5 miles and we were done. But we'd been up 24 hours on this relay, so we were tired. So we're running through a town. We were running to Calistoga, we were running through a town called St. Helena, California. And we were both pretty tired, and I was running behind you. And usually in these races, you find somebody to
pace. I don't know what you're talking about. I wasn't tired. I was super rejuvenated and having a great time.
We actually have an artist rendering of what that looked like. Let me see if I can figure this out, Geekscapists who are watching this live. I'm going to share the screen.
So you guys, while he's sharing the screen, I'm going to explain to you this race. It's like a massive relay. You're with these teams, and it's like 24 hours, or maybe it's even longer. I don't know. But you end up running the amount, each person on your team, I don't know, I think there are like six people, gets a different distance. The distance group that Jonathan and I were in was like almost a marathon's worth of running, but over three different legs. Over like when you sleep in a van while somebody's driving the van to be with the other person in the relay. And it was all through like Northern California. And I don't even remember what I saw. I saw Petaluma. I saw some wine country.
Yeah. You don't get a lot of sleep.
You run with a headlamp on for part of it. I mean, it's the craziest thing that my friends convinced me to do last minute.
I really love doing them. So I see Tasha. You guys can see her on the screen. Like, Tasha's a pretty woman, and I was like, okay, I'm going to pace with this girl. She's basically going my same pace, so I'm going to keep with her. And I'm going to throw a picture of another person pacing with Tasha from that same race up on the screen. And
2014.
This is about the distance that we were from each other. If you guys can see this picture up there, there's Tasha running, and she's not even sweating in this photo. And then there's this old dude behind her, and that's basically what I looked like.
That's actually a photo of Jonathan and I.
Yeah, that's what I look like now. But honestly, what I'm saying is that's the distance between us.
Yes.
And I was kind of keeping that distance. Now, what happens is we're running into this town of St. Helena, and I actually found it on Google Maps. Let me see if I can throw this up on Google Maps.
It's super cute town. If you're in Northern California, it's great. It's a great spot.
I found the town because I went and researched for this conversation, and I said, all right, can I find out where we were? And it's here it is. It's
the exact location, Jonathan. Show it here. To us.
Okay, so we were coming up like right around this intersection. Can you guys see that? Here we are in downtown St. Helena, and we're just running along, but it doesn't look like it's looking right now in the Google Maps.
It is under construction.
Yeah, there are shops. It's under construction. And then as we're going down this street right here, running along, don't mind us, running a race, we start to get to like this little intersection right past the Chevron station. And right around here, if you guys can see it, there's a lane closure. And in the lane closure, I'm going to go back to one of the lanes was actually blocked. And in it was a big ass tow sign that looked like this. It was where they had taken a giant trailer sign and then put it right there to stop traffic. And it said, there's an event in progress, like be careful. There are runners on the road.
It was like a sign intended to keep us safe.
And so what happens is I'm running that old guy distance behind you, and I see out of the corner of my eye, I'm about 2 feet behind you, off your left shoulder, 2 feet behind you, and I see this truck going straight in that lane that is about to be closed by this sign. And I don't see the truck getting out of that lane out of the corner of my eye. And what I realize is he's checking you out. He is looking at you. He is not paying attention to the fact that this lane is about to turn into a giant sign. Yeah. And he's going right into it. And
and we are right next to it. We are right next. We are just
we're about to run right past it.
Team, and we're like about to get there.
And the truck is plowing down into this sign, and I see another car, and I reach out and I go, stop! Or I yell something, and
I'm like,
do not grab women. Guys, do not grab women. But I grabbed you, and I said, stop. And the truck went right into this big ass sign and threw the whole fucking thing onto the parking, on the sidewalk, like, right in front of you. Now, I would argue, okay, I would argue that being behind you, seeing the truck out of the corner of my eye, seeing that it was going straight to that sign, that in grabbing you and keeping you from running forward where that sign ended up running right into the sign flew into the sidewalk right in front of you, I saved your life. I would argue that I saved your life.
I'm going to tell the story again about how I saved your life. Mm. It jumped. It jumped around, you guys. Can't imagine. Like, these signs, like, they look small when you're driving. But when it's, like, when a car hits it and a piece of the car flies off, the truck.
The truck was
fine. He kind of clipped it and went around. But, like, a piece of the, like, bumper kind of flew off.
The whole sign went onto the sidewalk. The sidewalk was gone.
Yeah. So, my point of view of this is I'm running, and I'm coming towards this sign that's there to keep us safe. And I see also out of the corner of my eye, this truck coming into this sign. And I'm like, oh, I have to save every single person behind me immediately. So I throw my arms back and lean back into all the people that may or may not be behind me. And I go, watch out! Jonathan's life.
This sign, you have to drag it on a damn truck. This is a trailer sign that it would have killed everybody. That thing would have taken out multiple people.
Taken out a whole town.
It would have taken out half the town. The aliens would have invaded. But I definitely think that
we would not have met otherwise.
We would have met in the morgue is what we would have met. We would have met cold feet. We would have been dead, kid.
You know, after that, we kind of kept running, like, sort of together, and Jonathan...
No, you were ahead of me.
Jonathan's very kind to say that. He actually finally, at one point, very kindly said something like, I'm gonna pass you now, but like see you later or something. And he did pass me.
Nope.
He did. You finished before I did.
And, I don't think that's true, you know.
I think that part's true. But we did meet up at the finish and we were just like, oh my God. Like, and it was finally like the whole rest of the run was like kind of this reliving this moment over and over again, which is great because it was at least something to think about during this long run. But afterwards, when I saw Jonathan again, it was like, just like, I don't know you at all, but I hope you have the best life and everything goes wonderfully for you. And I'm pretty sure the next time I saw you was at San Diego Comic-Con. And I'm pretty sure I was like, what? And I'm pretty sure I didn't really quite know that there were all the other connections until I met you on the floor, loud noise everywhere, people talking, and was like, wait, you're from the race.
You're that guy who like died and this and that. I think you're right. I definitely for sure got at least your name at the finish line and like exchange information. Yeah. But like I'm a married man. I wasn't gonna be using any of that. Like I was like, no. But you're right. We ended up meeting at either LA Comic Con again or San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah. San Diego was before.
It was insane. Nobody believed the story. Even our own teammates at the finish line didn't believe
it. I know, we were telling everyone. Also, to their credit, like they were all really tired and exhausted from being in a van and running as well. But I wish we were like, you wouldn't believe what happened. And everyone was like, and I'm like, did you hear what I just said? We almost died together.
We almost died together. And Ricto on YouTube says, the grabbing was totally not necessary. Yeah, guys, don't grab women. You know, wait for them to throw their arms across the way and like save everybody.
Yeah.
Just wait for them to do that whole thing.
But also don't let anybody die when you can stop it from happening.
Listen, if it was between grabbing a woman and watching her get splattered across the sidewalk by a giant sign kicked into her by a truck that didn't see it because he was checking said woman out, I'm grabbing the woman. I'm sorry. I'll apologize later. But
no, 100%. Like, you get it.
And I think I grabbed you by the arm. I didn't exactly. It wasn't like, yo, watch out. I grabbed you by the ass. I wasn't like, yo, let me do a reach around on them. Like, I wasn't going to do that. Like, that wasn't going to happen. I grabbed you strategically.
That would have been a hilarious way to be saved. Like, oh, excuse me.
Don't mind me. Just cupping them titties. What the hell's that?
Hashtag me too.
Geekscapists. It's strange how this world keeps spinning and these connections happen. And here we are on Geekscape. Okay, there's a couple things I want you guys to do. All right, Geekscapists, this is your mission. You Geekscapists love the missions. I want you to go to Odd Pop and go find Tasha's short. There's an easy way to do it. You go to Instagram, you find Tasha Litas. That's her hashtag. That's her ID there on Instagram. That's her handle. And there's a link in her bio. You click on that link. You watch her short. You join. I think you got to join Odd Pop, but you should if you're a filmmaker. And then you end up voting for her short. You vote it up a couple notches, and she gets in the next round, and hopefully she gets cool stuff. There's all sorts of cool contests on the site, so you guys who are creative, you guys can make stuff too. The other thing I want you guys to do is I want you guys to put in your brain the Fatale Collective. It's a group of six female filmmakers who have each other's back and make horror stuff together and genre stuff. And this is Geekscape. We love horror stuff. We love genre stuff. Keep that group in your mind because you've heard about them on Geekscape. They've been to places like Fantastic Fest premiering their shorts. And they're going to start making some cool stuff as soon as this pandemic's over. And probably during the pandemic, they've already started making cool stuff. So just be like, oh, I remember them from Geekscape. And now they're making cool stuff for the studios. And the other thing I want you guys to do is, just stay safe and make it through the pandemic. And then when Sean comes back to promote, I don't know, Suicide Squad 2 or something, be like, oh, yeah, that sequel was better than the first. I don't know. What?
Promote yet?
Well,
this movie's not out.
I know, but the name of the name of the movie is The Suicide Squad.
That's not actually a sequel.
No, what's cool about that is it's got that 70s feel to that name. It's like the Suicide Squad. It's like the Dirty Dozen. It's like, yeah, you know, that whole thing. I think that's cool.
And I can't talk about the movie other than that it's, it really is, man, it's good. And and what else can I say about it? Oh, that you did have, you absolutely don't need to see the first one.
Yeah.
To see it and enjoy it. It's a new incarnation thing. Not so much a sequel.
Well, as a big comic book fan, I'm down. I see all these movies, and the cast is awesome. The dude we got to get on the show, too, is your little German friend who was in that movie. Flula. Flula and I also met at Comic-Con. Flula is awesome. Flula Borg is hilarious. I should get him on the show.
Yeah, I love him.
Flula is
big basketball fan, too.
Hilarious. Oh, yeah. We'll go to a Clippers game.
Guys, whenever we go back to basketball games, we'll all go to a basketball game. Because I got to tell you, Sean, the last live game I went to was that one before Christmas where the Jazz visited the Clippers and Donovan did that baseline slam. And Jazz came out of there. That was a pretty fucking awesome game to be at live. Thank you, Heidi, for the tickets.
That was before the Clippers really put it together when the Jazz were still in a position to beat them.
Don't play that game. All right, we'll be talking about that. You know my excuse this year is going to be like, yeah, but Boyan got thumb surgery. He's out.
It's weird. I'm an atheist, but I believe that God hates the Clippers. I don't know.
He used to think God just hated Sterling,
this is like they finally.
This was their year.
The Clippers finally had a real shot at making an actual legit championship run, and God sent a virus to destroy humanity. Coincidence? I don't know.
I'll tell you what. There have been a couple of
destroy the chances of the Clippers, and that is all it's about.
That Lob City team was pretty scary too. But Blake Griffin, there are a lot of the what ifs, and you know,
against the Rockets in 2015 that's the worst.
I'm with you, brother. Where the Rockets came back on him, that was not fun. As a Clippers fan, as a Jazz fan, you're just like, oh, thank God it's not us because it's usually us. All right, Sean, we'll get you on the show one day, but right now we're going to talk about your lady. You guys know what to do. You guys know to go to her Instagram, find the link. It's up on the site. Sean, love you, buddy.
You too. Thanks.
And you guys hit that link. Come on, hit that link and vote for her short. Geekscapist, thank you. Tasha, anything else you want to say?
Man, thank you so much for all of this. It's so cool to see.
For saving your life.
It's always cool to see people's faces now. Like it was like, oh, faces or whatever. But like pandemic times, it's like, ooh, yeah. It's so pretty. It's great to see you. Thanks for having me here. Thanks for talking about Jane in Space. That's just this, a little pandemic film. Jane in Space 2. Jane in Space
2
is a sequel, you guys. You can find Jane in Space 1 that's not labeled 1. Just floating around on my Instagram, but that one doesn't require votes. The one that really needs the votes is Jane in Space 2. They're very different. Jane in Space 1, I would say, is funnier, and Jane in Space 2, I would say, is deeper.
It's fun.
If anyone cares, but mostly, thanks.
Tasha, I want to work with you. I want to get out of this pandemic, and I want to make live action stuff again, so let's figure out how to do that.
With teams of people who we love and we can bring together and who have special skills and are good at what they're good at.
Oh, I hope that I'm the least talented person on my set. Then I know I have a chance of making something I'm proud of.
I agree.
Tasha, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Love you, kiddo. That was Tasha. Halevi, again, guys, go to Tasha's Instagram and vote for Jane in Space 2. This is Geekscape. I love you guys. I'm going to be back next week with more Geekscape. If this is your first time watching, go ahead and subscribe. We put out the podcast. Subscribe on any podcatchers you guys got. If you guys are watching on YouTube or Twitch or any of those other video platforms, go and hit that notification button so you guys know when I'm going live and you guys can watch alongside and drop the comments and this and that. Love you guys so much. Geekscape forever. Over and out. Peace.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.